You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. One of the biggest travel trends around these days is volunteer tourism or voluntourism. Instead of staying in a comfy hotel, spending your day sightseeing, you connect with organizations that need help and do things like tutor orphans, build schools, and farm.
Our next guest and his whole family decided to take up the challenge of volunteer tourism. They spent 6 months abroad and volunteered in Costa Rica, Thailand, New Zealand, and India.
John Marshall joins us now. He wrote about his journey in the book Wide Open World, How Volunteering Around the Globe Changed One Family's Life Forever. John, welcome to Central Time.
Veronica and Rob, thank you so much for having me.
Well, how did you first get that idea for a year of service or volunteer tourism?
Well, the idea, I mean, like a lot of families, I think, we always had a fantasy that we would take a trip around the world. The problem was we just couldn't afford it. And so our children were getting older and older. And finally, when our son became a junior in high school, we thought, you know, this is it. If we don't take this trip and actually make this happen, it's never going to happen. Because once he gets to college, you know, that'll be the window will be shut. But then I had this idea. It actually just popped into my head. I wasn't thinking of anything at the time. And the idea was year of service, those three words. And as soon as those three words occurred to me, I knew exactly what they meant. And I knew if I said them out loud, it would actually happen, and that's what happened. I told my wife, and she chomped down on it like a pit bull, and we took off.
Well, the idea, you know, appealed to you for a bunch of reasons. As you say, a big one was that you wanted to reconnect with your family, your kids, and your wife. Why did you think that volunteering abroad would help that cause?
Well, we did some traveling before when our children were 7 and 5. We lived for a year over in a Portuguese fishing village after a few tragedies in our lives, and that really brought the family close together. We really needed to depend on each other. We lived in a very small place, and I thought if we could take this trip, which would fulfill a lifelong dream, it would also make us depend on each other. You know, like a lot of families too, I think our children were kind of lost in cyberspace. They spent all their time on their phones and their computers, and I missed them. I wanted them back with me, and I thought, well, if we can just unplug them, we'll get them back in the family. And and so that's what we did, and you know that actually proved to work.
And before we get to the trip itself, I know a lot of people listening might be going, well, how do you actually pull that off, even volunteering, when you've got a home, you've got a mortgage and bills and all the stuff that costs money and needs our attention every day? How did you go about planning kind of the financial end of it?
Right. I mean, that's one thing that I want to stress to people who are listening, is that if we can do this trip, you could, if you wanted to, you could do this trip. I mean, we ended up doing it for 6 months. We couldn't quite pull all the details together, so we ended up taking our year of service and kind of squashing it down to 6 months, but 6 months is still a nice long time. And we ended up renting our house. We did have to leave our jobs. That was something we had to do. We took the kids out of school, and we took out a home equity loan. So, I mean, we didn't have a pile of cash to where we could say, you know, let's just go squander this on our big trip. But our budget was really low. Our budget was $1,000 a month for all four of us to live and eat in a foreign country. And that works out to $8 a day per person. So that was much cheaper for us to travel around the world for 6 months than to stay at home and just live in our lives. And in the book, I have a section at the back that says how to volunteer your way around the world. And it will walk you through all of our expenses, exactly how we did it, how we pulled it together, and lay it out so that anyone who really has a desire, not just, you know, a passing thought like, oh, wouldn't that be nice? But if you make the decision to go and do it, I really think that's the key. Once you decide, then the rest is kind of details to figure out.
And typically when you do one of these volunteer stints, does the group that you're volunteering with, the organization, did they pay for your place to stay, your room, your board, that kind of thing?
No. You know, volunteering is a way that a lot of NGOs make some money. So to have a volunteer come to you, it takes some resources from the organization. So they need to give you something to do, but they need to supervise you, and they need to make sure, you know, and communicate with you. And so they charge a small fee for the opportunity to go and serve. Some places don't. Some places are completely free. If you go and volunteer on organic farms, say in New Zealand, as we did, it's free. You just find an organic farm that needs some help, and you go and live with them, and they give you free room and board in exchange for your service. But like when we taught English in Thailand, there's an organization in America called Voluntai that takes non-English teachers and puts them in rural parts of Thailand to help out, places that typically wouldn't get teachers to go because there's no sites to see. And there it cost, I think it cost us $900 for all four of us to go for a month and live and work in Thailand. So you just have to do some searching around and find places that fit your budget. But there's free places out there, and there are places that cost a little bit. There's places that cost a lot, but you just find what works for you.
Now, the first place that you chose was Costa Rica, and you admit that you kind of chose it because you thought it would be easy, kind of easy on your kids, too. Take us to those first days when you were meeting these, for instance, troop of spider monkeys that you were going to be part of.
Right. I mean, the funny thing about Costa Rica was that I did pick it because I thought, okay, this will be an easy way to kind of wade into the shallow end of the service pool. I mean, what are we going to do at a sanctuary? We're going to rake a few cages. Maybe we're going to, you know, feed the animals. It'll be easy. It turned out not to be that way at all. The place that we went to is the only place that I know of that's raising orphaned or injured spider monkeys outside of cages. So when you go there, you actually live in a cage, and the monkeys are on the bars outside your windows. Then every time you step outside, you're just part of the monkey troop. And so the monkeys will climb right up on you. Now, the only problem with that is I got a note right before we got there that said that the monkeys sometimes don't like large white males. And that's a pretty good definition of me.
And you wonder what don't like means.
They love my wife. But they kind of wanted to keep me in my place, I think.
So did you have any close encounters with angry spider monkeys?
Yeah, no, it wasn't anger. And the answer to that question, though, is absolutely yes. You'll see in the book if anyone looks at it. There was one monkey who I think really liked me. Everywhere I went on the property, this monkey, whose name was Sweetie, would climb on me and ride me everywhere I went. I would sit on my head and sit on my shoulders. But the problem was she was very jealous of other people and other monkeys. So monkeys look very human. They look like little humans. They look very smart when you're up close with them, but they're not. I mean, they have different rules. Things like dominance and territory are things that their lives revolve around. So when someone shows too much attention to you, one monkey can get jealous, and instead of going after that other monkey, they go after me. which made for some pretty harrowing and sometimes funny encounters with these guys. But I love my time at the sanctuary, even though I have a few scars to remember it by.
So you're at the Osa Wildlife Sanctuary. This is your first stop on this round the world trip of volunteering. Did you feel at that point like, you know, this is going pretty well? The family and I are coming together. Sure, we had a rough, you know, really awful bus ride out, but this is shaping up to be what we want it to be, or was it challenging right away?
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't a fairy tale. This wasn't like we hit the road and suddenly the angels started singing and the skies parted. You know, there was definitely difficult moments. I mean, spider monkey bites aside, there was homesickness, and there were internet withdrawals, and there were times where, you know, our kids, maybe other parents can relate to this, but around the house here at home, they're not always so eager to work. And if I take them out in the yard and want to rake up the leaves in the fall, you know, if you get 5 minutes of work out of them or 10 minutes of work, sometimes it's like pulling teeth. But out on the road, that's the job. Like, you're there to work. And so as teenagers, my daughter was 14 and my son was 17 at the time, you got to work. That's part of the deal. So in Costa Rica, we got absolutely royally chewed out by the person who was running the place. And he said, look, this isn't a vacation. You know, you're here to work. And it really struck my kids, I think, because they the next day came on time for the first time ever. They did their jobs without complaint. And from there on after, They just did the work that was required of them. Like in New Zealand was our next stop, and we worked on the farms. Sometimes we'd have to work for 5 hours a day. And there I am with my son, who hadn't chopped wood for more than 5 minutes in his whole lifetime. He's spending 5 hours with me chopping log after log with no complaint, just working hard and kind of actually getting into it. And I can say for myself, and I imagine other parents out there can imagine this too, when I watched my kids working willingly, that was like my highlight of this whole trip, watching them work and do what was asked of them and be really capable. I mean, these kids taught their own English classes in Thailand. My two kids had their own classes that they taught by themselves. And that only is not good. I mean, that's not only good for your resume, but it's good for your soul. It's good for you as a person.
We're talking right now with John Marshall. He's a writer, producer, and director. He's the author of the book Wide Open World, How Volunteering Around the Globe Changed One Family's Life Forever.
And we'd like to hear what you have to say. Have you spent time volunteering in other countries? What was your experience like? Do you have a story to share? What do you think about the big rise in this idea of volunteer travel? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about volunteer travel this hour. Another word for it is voluntourism. It's what our guest and his family did for 6 months in a wildlife sanctuary in Costa Rica, an orphanage in India, a farm in New Zealand, and more. John Marshall joins us now. He's the author of Wide Open World.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you done this? Have you been a volunteer tourist, a voluntourist? Call in, share your experience at 800-642-1234.
And we've got one of WPR's staffers in the studio with us, Elizabeth Deliquist, who has done some time, isn't right the right word, but clocked some time doing volunteer tourism around the globe recently. You've been in Ireland, you've been in Morocco. Elizabeth, thanks for stopping by.
Always good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about where you went.
Okay, so I was traveling for 7.5 months, and I volunteered with an organization called Workaway. And Workaway is nice because you sign up, you do a, you pay like $30 for a 2-year membership, and then you can just find hosts, you contact them, you arrange what kind of work you're going to do, when you're going to arrive, you work out all the details, and then you go volunteer with them. So I spent 3 months in Croatia, 3 weeks teaching English in Morocco, 3 weeks building houses in Spain, 2 weeks working at a guest house in Norway, and 2.5 weeks doing yard work in Ireland.
And all of those, what was the most rewarding to you, the one you remember the most?
Croatia was the best because I was there the longest, and I think the longer you do a volunteer placement, the more you get to know people, you become friends with your host, you get to know the local area, you start to pick up the language, so you really feel like you've become part of a community in a way that you don't if you're doing a shorter placement.
And you agree with John, our guest, that there was something sort of good for the soul about working so hard and doing it to help people.
Absolutely. I think when you're doing more conventional traveling, it's kind of like it's kind of like you're a consumer. You know, you're going around and you're seeing sights and you're going to restaurants and you're not really becoming a part of the community. Whereas when you're working and living with a local, you're having an experience that you would never get in a guidebook anywhere.
Great. Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
That was Elizabeth Deliquist, a staffer here at Wisconsin Public Radio who has spent some time volunteering abroad. And we're going to go to our callers next. Ellen, you're with us first in La Crosse. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I traveled for my second time in January to St. Lucia with a group out of Wausau, Wisconsin that's called the Good News Project. They've had a presence in the Caribbean, St. Lucia, Grenada, and St. Vincent, or St. Lucia, Dominica, and St. Vincent for about 30 years. We don't travel for 6 months or 8 months, but you can get a sampling, and you go for 2 weeks, and we build houses. We build small 16 by 12 houses that are much better than what the people had prior to our arrival. We do some visits at the nursing homes and some of the schools and the prison, and it is a fantastic experience.
Well, thank you, Ellen. Appreciate you sharing your experience building small houses. And John, it sounds like people are saying it is quite a cultural immersion going on there and something that feels good. Do you feel like you did move through quite a few countries? Do you feel like you really got to know them, though, along the way?
Yeah. Well, like Elizabeth said, I think the longer you stay in a place, the more you're going to have an impact. And that's not just an impact that you'll have, but the impact that it will have on you. So we had our plan was to stay for 1 month in each spot, roughly 1 month in each spot. And by doing that, then you actually get to know a place instead of just breezing in and out and having a tiny bit of impact. But like your caller said, I mean, so she goes for a week or 2 weeks. That's great. I don't want to give the impression that, hey, unless you can go for 6 months, it's not worth doing. Because I think that even a vacation can be enhanced by a day. Find a place where you can be of service for a day. And, you know, the attitude of this is not to go in and think, I'm going to change the world. I mean, we didn't feel that in our trip, like we're going to go out and be so benevolent and save the world. Because in the end of the day, what we found was that it's the world that changes you. And so, but you have to go out and be open and be humble and show up and do your best. And, you know, we found that the rewards you'll get, and that's probably a familiar refrain for most anyone who would comment on having done this, is that you'll get so much more out of the process than you put into it.
Now, one of the things you did was you worked with orphans in India at a place called The Farm, and the man who ran this particular orphanage, you asked him what he wanted you to do, and he said, you just love the kids. So what did you do to carry that out?
Right. I mean, The Farm is something that I'm still to this day involved with. It had a really profound impact on me because, you know, you think of orphans. Everyone thinks of orphans as kind of a sad, you know, faceless mass that's out there in the world. There's an estimation, excuse me, that there's 150 million orphans in the world today. And so, you know, what do we do about this number? It's so massive, we just forget about it and move on to something else. But when you meet them one at a time, when you meet these kids, when you see someone who's hopeless, and you help to bring them into a place where they now have hope and love and food and someone who cares for them, that is really the best work that I've ever been a part of. And I've done some fun things. I mean, I've worked in television. I've done some fun jobs. But helping these children and being a part of their lives, they treated me, some of these kids at the farm, I'm not sure why, but they're so filled with a joy that's really palpable that they were filling me up every day with love as if I was the one who was empty. And I'm there to help them. So really, working with those kids was really, I mean, I did everything I could to make them happy and to add some value, and we did fundraisers, and I shot videos, and I did whatever I could to help them. But in the end of the day, I got much, much more from them, I think, than I could have ever given to them.
Let's take another caller now. Laura joins us in Madison. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Hi, what is your comment?
I was just calling. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Western Samoa in the South Pacific for 2 years. And I had a really great experience, and I thought it was interesting. A lot of the callers are talking about the personal experiences, which I could talk for hours about. But on the other side of it, what we were doing there, the Peace Corps did a great job of instilling the idea of sustainability and that our projects were meant to be sustainable once we were gone. I worked specifically with a little boy who had a hearing disability, and it wasn't just, you know, getting him a hearing aid. It was teaching him sign language, teaching his family sign language, teaching his classmates how to communicate with him with his hands. So once I was gone, that could continue, and he can continue learning and progressing throughout school once we were not there anymore.
Laura, thank you so much for that call. Appreciate that. And John, as we run short of time here, was there a moment on this trip that you knew you were changed forever, your relationship with your family, but also who you were as people?
Yeah, I mean, there's something about, I felt before in my life that you imagine the world, you have a sense that it'd be nice to do something, to have a life that has some meaning, to have some purpose, to be of service, to do something like this. And you may imagine the world is a certain way. Well, going out and taking this trip, for me, was a way, you know, I've had a moment where I was struck by this, that if you want to fall in love with the world, you need to meet it first. And when you meet it, it's really easy to fall in love with people that you meet. You know, it's like orphans, you might think of orphans in a hypothetical sort of way, and it's hard to really feel what it would be like to help one. But when you meet these kids, or when you meet the families that you're staying with, or the children at the Thai school, or all the different places where we went, when you meet them, when you actually get to spend mm-hmm. time, then it's really easy to fall in love with them. It's really easy to want.
We'll leave it there. To meet the world, to fall in love with the world, you have to meet it. John Marshall joins us now. He's the author of Wide Open World.